Chapter 9. Ichan, 6 weeks later. A word with the Fant. Knives in the night. The bicephalic minder in the squalid doorway of the twist bar regarded us with one of his lice-ridden heads, while the other glazed out, smoking an obscura pipe.
Not your place. Not your kind. Get on.
The sap rain was falling heavily on our heads through the rotten awning, and I had little wish to stand in it any longer. I nodded a sidelong glance to my companion, who tugged back his hood and showed the minder the cluster of malformed, winking eyes that mottled his cheek and ran down his pallid throat. I raised my own damp cloak and revealed the knot of stunted tentacles that sprouted from an extra sleeve slit under my right armpit. The minder got off his stool, one head nodding dozily. He was big, broad, and tall as an ogryn, and his greasy skin was busy with tattoos. He muttered, limping around us as he sized us up.
Maybe, then. You didn't smell like twists. Okay.
We went inside, down a few dark steps into a nocturnal clubroom that was fogged with obscura smoke and pulsing with a brand of harsh, discordant music called Pound. Panes of red glass had been put over the lights of the lanterns, and the place was a hellish swamp, like the damnation paintings of that insane genius Orma Metia. Malforms, deforms, half-breeds and underscum huddled or gambled or drank or danced. On a raised stage, a naked, heavy-breasted, eyeless girl with a grinning mouth where her navel should have been, gyrated to the pound beat. We reached the bar, a soiled curve of hardwood under a series of hard white lights. The barkeep was a bloated thing with bloodshot eyes and a black snake tongue that flickered between his wet, slit mouth and rotting teeth.
"Hey, Twist, what will it be?"
"Two of those," I said, pointing to clear grain alcohol shots that a waitress was carrying past on a tray. She would have been beautiful, except for the yellow quills stippling her skin. Twists. We were all twists here. Mutant is a dirty word if you're a mutant. They delight in referring to themselves by the Imperium's glibbest and most detrimental slang as a badge of honour. It's a pride thing, a common habit with any underclass. Non-telepaths do it when they call themselves blunts. The tall, slender people of low-grav Sylvan do it when they call themselves sticks. A slur's not a slur if you use it on yourself. Labour laws on Ichan permit twists to work as indentured labourers in the industrial mill farms and the sap distilleries, provided they abide by the local regime and keep themselves to the licensed shantytowns huddled in the skirts of the bad end of Ichan Mainhive. The barkeep slapped two heavy shot glasses down on the counter and filled them to the brim with grain liquor from a spouted flask. I tossed a couple of coins down and reached for my drink. The bloodshot eyes leered at me.
"What's this? Imperial coins? Come now, Twist. You know we ain't allowed to trade in those."
I paused. A glance down the counter showed me that the rest of the clientele were paying in mill-authorized coupons or nuggets of base metal, and that they were all staring and scowling at us. A basic mistake, right off the bat. My companion leaned forward and sipped his drink.
"Don't get fret with two thirsty twists who's happened to have lucked into a good black score, eh?"
The barkeep smiled and his black tongue flickered. He scooped up the coins.
"Ain't no fret, Twist. You earn 'em, I'll take 'em. Just saying you might not want to go flashing 'em, so."
We took our drinks away from the bar, looking for a table. It had taken 6 weeks to reach Ichan, and I was impatient for a lead. The beat changed. Another pound number began pumping through the underfloor speakers, which, to my untutored ears, was simply a variation in auditory assault. But the crowd clapped and roared approval. The naked girl with a grinning stomach began rotating her hips the other way. "I have a feeling I should be leaving this to you," I whispered to my companion.
"You're doing fine."
"Don't get fret, Twist. For God Emperor's sake, where did you learn to talk like that?"
"You never hung with Twists?"
"Not like this."
"So I'm guessing you don't shlove that Jean Jack Pound beat, Twist?"
"Stop it, or I'll shoot you." Harlan Nail grinned and blinked with all his 16 eyes in mock offense.
"Sup up, Twist. If that ain't fantastic, I'll poke my eyes out."
"Oh, let me," I hissed and slugged back my shot.
"Raise 'em and sink 'em, and let's have another."
I grimaced to myself as the burning spirit scalded down my esophagus, and then scooped two more drinks from the tray of the porcupine girl as she sashayed past. Fantmastic sat with his cronies in a side booth. Generations of Radstorm mutation had made him an obese thing, with wrinkled flesh and enlarged features. His ears were frayed fan-like swathes of veiny skin, and his nose was a drooping proboscis. An incongruous tuft of thick red hair decorated his Neanderthal brow. His eyes were deep-set and black. And sad, I thought. Tremendously sad. He was drinking from a big tankard by snorting the alcohol up through his dangling nose. His mouth, distorted by tusk-like jags of tooth, was useless. A Twist whore, with an unnecessary number of arms, was sipping her drink, smoking an Obscura stick, retouching her makeup and doing something to Fant under the table that he was clearly enjoying. We approached. Fant's minders got up immediately to block us. A horned brute and a Twist whose entire head was a wrinkled skin hood for an outsized eye. They both reached into their robes.
"How are you tonight, Twists?" puffed Horned Brute. "We fine, no fret. Just gonna talk to the Fant," said Nail.
"Ain't not gonna happen," said Big Eye, his voice muffled by his clothing. God Emperor knew where his mouth was.
"I think so. When we have a such a scalding black score, him to enjoy."
Nail didn't shrink back.
"Let them through,"
Fant said, his voice conveyed by an augmetic carry sound unit, a Vox implant. Few Twists had the money for that. Fant was certainly a player. The minders stepped aside and allowed us into the booth. We sat.
"Go on. Twist, I tell you, we be in the market for Section Alpha brain jobs. We's hear you got one for the begging. Here? Where?"
"Round and around," said Nail.
"Aha. And you are?"
"Just two Twists gonna earn us a deal," I said.
"That right."
We sat in silence for a moment as Fant called for more drinks. The girl was now combing and fixing her hair and doing her makeup. One of her many hands was on my knee under the table. She winked at me, with an eye growing from the end of her tongue.
"What I got ain't no Section Alpha, Twists. It's a Section Alpha Plus. That's why we came to you, Fant. Swy, no upper limit for our buy. How you gonna pay?"
Nail dropped one of the ingots onto the table.
"Pure mellow yellow, and we got the bars. Much as it takes. So, Swen, where?" "I gotta talk to some people."
"Kay.
Where can I reach you?" "The Twist and Sleep. You sleep tight. Maybe I call you."
The audience was over. We took a table of our own near the raised stage and stayed for a couple more rounds, making a show of appreciating the indecent writhings of the girl with the belly mouth. After an hour or so, we saw Fant and his retinue leave by a side door. "Let's go," I said. We finished our drinks and rose. Nail gave Porcupine Girl a handful of coins and patted her bottom. Her quills bristled, but she smiled. The minder didn't spare us a look with either of his heads as we left. Out of sight, round the corner of the dreary bar stoop, I handed Nail one of a pair of brass stim injectors, and we detoxed quickly to rid our bodies of the alcohol dulling our systems. It was the dead of night, but there was little darkness. The great curve of Ichan's ring systems glowed with reflecting sunlight and shone like bands of diamond-crusted platinum. The main street of the shanty was a rutted, waterlogged morass, and flaking boardwalk pavements edged the rows of slumping, dingy buildings. Glowing signs and the few street lamps reflected in the street puddles. Beyond the shanty, to the west, the alpine slopes of the main hive rose against the stars, like a dark mountain of trash decorated with a million little lights. To the east were the stacked grubby mushrooms of the mill farms and the distilleries, venting brown steam and yellow pollutants into the wind. To the south, in the verdant farmlands, plains of thick rubbery growth, we could see the running lights of several vast harvesters. They were segmented juggernauts, beetle-like machines the size of small starships, chewing up the greenbelt with massive reaping mandibles and digesting it through vast interior vats and work lines. Flues lined their backs like spines and spewed moisture waste and atomized sap up high into the atmosphere, where it drifted and fell again like rain. Everything in the Twist shanty was sticky with sapfall. The rain was tacky and thick like syrup. The street puddles were viscous. Downpipes glugged and throbbed rather than pouring. Everywhere there was a stench of decomposing plant fibre and liquefied cellulose. "Do you think he took the bait?" I asked.
Nail nodded. You could see he was interested. Gold's rare on Ichan. His eyes lit when I showed him that ingot.
He'll want to check us, though.
Of course, he's a businessman.
We walked along the street, hoods raised against the sticky rain. There were a few mutants around, all of them dressed in rancid tatters. They shambled along, lurked in doorways around covered braziers, or shared obscure bottle pipes out of the rain and dim breezeways. A squirt of sirens warbled down the main street, and Nail pulled me into an alley end. A black armored landspeeder with blazing grilled lamps crept past. I saw the crest motif of the main hive Arbetes on the side, and an armored officer sat in the top hatch, manipulating a spotlight. The beam played across us and passed along. Another flute of siren noise sounded, and we heard a vox-amplified voice demand,
"Idents and papers, you five, now!"
Moaning and grumbling, a pack of twists moved out into the street, lit by the spot beam, as the officers dismounted to shake them down and run their gene prints through the system. Something we couldn't afford to let happen. Not if we wanted to maintain our position as anonymous mutants. One flash of my credentials would speed us past any Arbetes red tape, but it might also alert Lyco. I'd insisted on full concealment for the mission. No one knew we were here officially. Amos had done some surreptitious checking, and there was no official trace of Lyco either. But that was to be expected, and there was no telling how many main hive officials he might have backhanded to alert him of any inquisitorial presence. Nail and I turned west at the next junction and followed the maze of alleys and breezeways between the rents and millhabs to reach the Twist and Sleep by a circuitous route that would keep us off the main thoroughfares and away from our Arbetes patrols. And, as it turned out, bring us right into trouble. It didn't look like trouble at first. A short, flat-browed runt in rags stepped into our path, grinning like a salesman. He held his hands open as if he was going to curtsy.
Twists, my friends. Spare a few perials for a poor badgeen down on his luck.
I heard Nail begin to say,
Not tonight, Twist. Let's get you to one side.
But I had already tensed. How had this scab scum known to ask for imperial coins if he hadn't seen us at the bar and followed us on purpose? His accomplices came out of the gloom and sap rain behind us. I rammed the word evade hard into Nail's mind with a pathic surge and dropped. A massive spiked weapon sailed through the space our heads had just been occupying and connected with nothing but air. The runt who had waylaid us uttered quite the most obscene series of curses I'd ever heard and dived on me. He had a double-headed dagger with a knurled handguard. I caught his upflung wrist as he made to gouge at me, broke his elbow and kicked him through a nearby fence while he was still screaming in pain.
Boss, move!
I heard Nail sing out, and I rolled hard aside in the mud as the spiked weapon slammed down into the mire. It was a thick length of timber with dozens of nails and knife blades hammered through it. The friendly end of it was held by two amazingly large paws. The paws belonged to a hulk, a 200-kilo monster covered with blistered fish scales and bony scutes. It wore only a pair of ragged blue trousers held in place around its midriff, almost comically, by a pair of red braces. It swung the spike post at me again, and I had to dive and shoulder roll to escape it. Nail was going toe-to-toe with two others, a snouted female in black leather whose mouth and nose were hideously combined into one drooling, snarling organ, and a tall, thin male with a face peculiarly distorted by bone and gristle. The female had a reaping sickle in each hand, and the tall male was armed with a mace made out of a reinforced strut, toothed with the rusting blades of two wood saws. Nail had drawn his serrated short sword and dueling knife and was fending off thrusts and strikes from both of them. A power sword, a bolt gun, a las carbine. They would all have finished this unnecessary encounter fast enough. But we had agreed to carry nothing that would mark us out from the Twist population. Tech levels were low in the shanty. A plasma gun might have ended this quickly, but stories would have got round. The scaly giant was on me again, and I fell through the rotting flakboard of a fence in my efforts to evade his swing. I found myself lying amid the debris in the backyard of one of the loathsome habrents. A light went on in an upper window, and abuse, stones, and the contents of a chamber pot were hurled at me. The giant came on, swinging his club from side to side. The nails and blades were darkly caked with dried blood. He backed me towards the rear of the rent dwelling and made to swing again.
No,
I commanded, using the will. He stopped dead. The rain of abuse and excrement from above stopped too. It would take him a moment to reconfigure his mind and find his anger again. I moved right at him, punching a knuckle-curved fist at the place where his nose should have been. There was a crack of bone and a spray of blood. The giant went down hard on his back, his nasal bone slammed back into his brain. Nail seemed to be enjoying his uneven duel. He was jeering at his attackers, deflecting the sickles with his sword and blocking the strenuous attacks of the mace with his knife. I saw him spin and belly-kick the male away, then turn to give the ghastly, snorting female his full attention. But more figures were emerging from the night. Ugly, abhuman scum dressed in rags. 3, 4 of them. I called a warning out to Nail and pulled out my black powder pistol. It was a clumsy antique I'd acquired from the black market on Front's planet, but even so, I'd dumbed it down to Ichan tech levels by replacing the engraved furniture with a shaped piece of packet wood. The flintlock mechanism was in good order, though. It cracked loudly with a fizz and a flash, the recoil punishing my wrist, and the ball went point-blank through the forehead of the nearest twist, exploding the rear of his cranium in a surprisingly messy fountain. But it was a one-shot piece, and there was no time for reloading. Two of the remaining outlaws came right at me, the other turning to come in on Nail's flank. I broke the teeth of the first one to reach me with the rounded butt of the pistol, and ducked the second's poorly judged slice with a rapier. Backing away, I drew my own blade, also a rapier, shorter by a good 10 centimeters than my opponent's, but balanced and guarded with a hand net of articulated metal struts. Our blades clashed. He was good, trained to his skill by a life of slaughter in the underhive, but I had me on my side. I dazzled him with the Ulsar and the Uin Ulsar, and then drove him back with a 4-stroke combination of Pel Igam and Uin Pel Inar, before ripping the blade out of his dazed fingers with a swift Tan Asaf Waila. Then the Ul Ker. My blade transfixed his torso. He looked confused for a second, and then fell down, sliding dead off my blade. His broken-faced accomplice, blood spilling from my pistol whipping, flew at me, and I span, decapitating him with the edge of my blade. The Carthaeans believe side blade work is lazy and stress the use of the point, but what the hell? Nail had killed the third attacker with a body punch, and as I turned, he locked both of the female's sickles around his twisting knife and ran her through with his main blade. He turned to me and raised his bloody short sword to his nose in a salute. I returned it with my rapier. The siren of an Arbetes ground car was wailing along the alley. "Time to be gone," I said to Nail.
"I thought you were dead,"
Beckwin cursed, as Nail and I burst into the room in the twist and sleep.
"We had some fun on the way home," Nail said. "Don't worry, Lizzie. I brought the boss back safe."
I smiled and fixed myself a small amasek from the bureau. Beckwin hated to be called Lizzie. Only Nail had the balls to do it. Amos was hovering by the window. Somehow the rags of his twist disguise suited him.
"Most perturbatory. The Arbetes are coming this way."
"What?" Nail moved to the window.
"Amos is right. 3 land cruisers pulled up outside. Officers coming in."
"Hide yourselves, now," I ordered. Amos hurried through the communicating door into the other bedchamber and threw himself down on the cot. Nail blundered into the adjoining bathroom and used a tooth mug and loud groans to suggest he was busy throwing up. Elizabeth looked at me frantically. "Into bed, hurry," I ordered. The Arbetes kicked open the door and played their flashlights over the bed.
"Hive Arbetes, who's in here?"
"What is this?" I asked, dragging the sheets back.
"Street fight killers. Witnesses say they came in here,"
said the Arbetes sergeant, advancing towards the bed.
"Me? I've been here all night. Me and my friends."
"They're going to vouch for you, Twist?"
asked the sergeant, raising his weapon.
"What's going on? Too much light," said Beckwin,
emerging from the dirty linen on the bed. Somehow she had removed her dress beneath the sheets. Clad in brief underwear, she slithered on top of me.
"What's you doing, stopping a girl making her way? Shame on you."
The sergeant ran his flashlight beam up and down the length of her body as it clung to me. I smiled the insane smile of the lucky or well-oiled. He snapped the light off.
"Sorry to interrupt you, miss."
The door closed and the Arbetes thumped away. I looked down at Beckwin with a wink. "Good improvisation," I said. She leapt off me and grabbed her clothes. "Don't get any funny ideas, Gregor." I'd had funny ideas about her for years, truth be told. She was beautiful, and sublimely sexy. But she was also an untouchable. It hurt me to be close to her, physically hurt. I hate that fact. I feel a lot for Beckwin, and I long to be with her, but it was never going to happen. Never, ever. That's one of the truly great sadnesses of my life. And hers, too, I hope, in my more self-aggrandizing moments. I lay in bed and watched her drag on her dress again, and I felt the pang of desire. But there was no way. No way in the galaxy. She was untouchable. I was a psyker. That way pain and madness lay.